Thanks for joining us today on The School Care Matters. In this series, we're unpacking the Indiana Department of Education's 7 social-emotional competencies. I'm Shane Presley from the School Care Team, and I'm joined today by my colleagues Tina Wooldridge and Karen Novinger from the School Care Team. Both Tina and Karen are social-emotional wellness specialists and regional trainers for the Sources of Strength Wellness Program in Northeast Indiana. Welcome. But before we dive in, maybe we could talk a bit about the School Care Team.
Sure. Our mission is to establish long-term relationships that impact entire school communities by anticipating needs and customizing how we serve schools as they strive to foster social and emotional well-being.
Ultimately, we envision schools that embrace a culture of care through understanding, empathy, and empowerment for everyone. And we believe that one way to get there is by promoting social-emotional competency for everyone in the building.
That sounds like an important goal. Perhaps we should begin by laying a foundation of what the competencies are and why they're important.
Absolutely. I think it's vital that everyone understands the why. Paradigm propels practice. In other words, our core values determine our choices. And if we're going to invest the time into developing our understanding of social-emotional learning, we should first believe that it's worth our time.
So before we get into whether it's valuable, maybe we should start with, what is SEL?
SEL, or social and emotional learning, refers to the development of individual strengths and traits related to social, emotional, cognitive, and moral development, which lead to positive mental health and well-being. SEL is not a program, a class, or a subject. Instead, students learn, apply, and practice SEL skills in the same way they learn other academic skills, through modeling, instruction, and practice, both inside and outside the classroom.
So you mentioned that if educators don't see social and emotional learning as a valuable investment of their time, then they aren't likely to develop it for themselves or in their classrooms. So why is SEL important?
Yeah, educators sometimes struggle to embrace the idea that social emotional learning belongs in the classroom. But the reality is that regardless of your academic content, the quality of your lesson plans, or your classroom management prowess, if the students in your classroom are not ready to learn, they simply won't learn. So that's the first reason SEL is important. Social-emotional skills are a necessary component of readiness to learn.
Remember Maslow's hierarchy of needs? Simply put, his theory was that people aren't motivated to reach their highest potential until their more basic needs are met. At the bottom of the pyramid are physiological needs, like food, water, sleep, and shelter. Then we move up to safety needs, the need for love and belonging, and the need for self-esteem and self-respect. All of those needs must be addressed before a person can fully engage in creative activities that lead to achieving one's full potential. That means that in order to be ready to learn, students must attend to those social and emotional needs first.
So are you saying that SEL is primarily for students whose brains aren't in a ready-to-learn state?
That's a great question. There's been a lot of discussion and training surrounding adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, and trauma, and their impact on the brain. That's incredibly valuable information. Over the last 5 to 10 years, we've begun to understand how these ACEs, including things like physical and emotional abuse and neglect, domestic violence, incarcerated family members, and substance misuse in the home, can interfere with brain development and render students less effective at connecting with others and regulating their emotions. But I would argue that SEL is for everyone. In fact, research has shown that the academic performance of students who engage in evidence-based SEL programs increases by 11 percentile points overall compared with students who don't participate in evidence-based SEL. And the Indiana Department of Education says that there's an $11 return on investment for every dollar spent on evidence-based SEL programming. Those returns or outcomes include a reduction in suspension rates and engagement with the juvenile criminal system, an increase in graduation rates, lifetime earning potential, and overall physical and mental health into adulthood.
So SEL is important because it fosters readiness to learn, safety, and belonging for all students?
Exactly. If you think about the strategies, programs, activities, and supports that constitute SEL, Why wouldn't they benefit everyone, regardless of their trauma history? We all need a sense of safety and belonging, so SEL really is for everyone. And by everyone, we don't just mean students.
Now, you mentioned that if educators don't see social and emotional learning as a valuable investment of their time, then they aren't likely to develop it for themselves or in their classrooms. But you're saying SEL is important for adults as well?
Absolutely. We need to attend to our own well-being before we can attend to the well-being of our students. Statistics show that about half of educators leave the field in the first 5 years, and current indicators show that number is increasing. We need to do something about that, and we can. Developing social-emotional competencies as adults better equips us to face the stressors associated with teaching so we can continue teaching and enjoying it for years, and so that when we go home at the end of the day, we still have resources to draw on to enjoy our families and our lives outside the workplace.
That's right, Karen. And I would add that social-emotional learning is equally important for parents and caregivers. These skills lead to success in our private and professional lives, and they provide valuable tools for parenting.
That's good to know for parents who are joining us today. Now, isn't it true that focusing on SEL takes away time that should be spent preparing students for graduation and beyond?
Let's look at that question from another perspective. If we want our students to graduate as responsible adults who are equipped to enter the workforce, then it's important to recognize and acknowledge that employability skills and social-emotional skills are virtually one and the same. The top four skills employers are looking for, according to a recent Forbes report, are teamwork, problem-solving, sound decision-making, and effective communication. Those skills align perfectly with the SEL competencies of connection, collaboration, critical thinking, and mindset.
You refer to SEL competencies. What exactly is a competency?
Competency is the ability to do something successfully and efficiently. For example, I can be a competent typist, a competent athlete, or a competent welder.
So, how do we measure competency?
It's not enough for me to claim I have a competency. Another word for competence is proficiency. It's a set of skills or indicators. For example, a typing proficiency test measures words and characters per minute and accuracy rate. A competent basketball player has developed offensive skills like shooting, passing, and dribbling, and defensive skills like blocking, stealing, and rebounding. A competent welder has demonstrated proficiency in blueprint reading, fabricating, grinding, and torching. Those are all measurable skills that demonstrate competency.
So, how do we measure social-emotional competency?
Good question. SEL is really no different. The IDOE has developed a framework of 7 social-emotional competencies, and each one is demonstrated by specific skills. So, for example, in order to say that I'm good at connecting with others, I need to demonstrate that competency by showing that I can listen attentively and reflect accurately the messages I receive from others, and I can acknowledge and validate another person's perspective and experience.
And how do we develop those skills?
Just like academic content, there are strategies and activities that can be explicitly modeled, taught, and practiced in the classroom and at home. Research shows that an integrated model works best.
What do you mean by that?
The more seamlessly we can integrate modeling, teaching, and practicing these skills into our home life and into everyday classroom routines and lessons, the more effectively we and our students will develop the skills. These competencies aren't additive. They really should become part of the fabric of how we operate in the classroom.
Okay, so can you elaborate on what you mean when you refer to adults modeling these skills?
Well, I think that's the foundation of all social-emotional learning. We can't pass on what we don't possess. Often we expect our students to engage in behaviors that we ourselves haven't yet fully developed. In fact, we recently collected data from a district-wide teacher survey showing that while 88% of respondents agreed that adults modeling expected behaviors is an effective method of classroom management, only 34% said SEL is modeled by teachers. I think this reveals that there's a disconnect between our paradigm and our practice. I suspect that if we had an opportunity to hear from parents, we'd hear the same idea. What parent doesn't think it's important to model things like emotional regulation, collaboration, and a growth mindset?
That's right.
But likely many of those same parents would say they aren't quite sure how to develop and model those skills for their kids. If we don't believe SEL competencies are for us, then we're not likely to exemplify them, either in our private lives or in our classrooms. But when we recognize how these skills are an integral part of our healthy relationships at home, with our friends and with our colleagues, as well as with our students, then I think we're more likely to invest the time and energy into developing them and modeling them before we begin expecting our students to possess them.
Yeah, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So how were the Indiana Department of Education's competencies determined?
Well, the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, or CASEL, is the national organization that sets the standard in making evidence-based SEL an integral part of education at every level. CASEL developed 5 core social-emotional learning standards that they believe foster cognitive and behavioral development. The state of Indiana partnered with faculty from Butler University's School of Education to adapt CASEL's framework by renaming and adding 2 competencies that are based on educational neuroscience. The DOE has landed on 7 competencies: sensory-motor integration, insight, regulation, connection, collaboration, critical thinking, and mindset.
Mm. So do these competencies need to be taught in order?
While each competency is designed to stand alone, there is a logical progression for developing them. In other words, it makes sense that if I want to be competent at working well with others, which is collaboration, I must first become competent at taking the perspective of and empathizing with others, which is connection. Mm-hmm. Or if I want to effectively and appropriately express my emotions, which is insight and regulation, then first I have to identify when I'm experiencing an emotion, which is sensory motor integration. Mm-hmm. So we can think of the competencies like building materials, and we have to begin with the foundation before we can add walls and a roof.
Mm. I see. So what are the competencies based on?
The foundational philosophy for these competencies comes from the most current brain research. It incorporates trauma-responsive and culturally responsive best practices. And as we talked about earlier, the competencies are based on what employers are looking for during the hiring process. Workplace readiness really is closely connected to social-emotional competence.
Since the competencies are based on brain research, are they accessible to everyone, regardless of their interest in science and their prior knowledge?
Yeah, that's a great question. Educational neuroscience sounds a little intimidating, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. In reality, there are a couple of basic principles that provide us with a foundation for social-emotional learning. Neuroscience is a complex and rapidly developing field, and even though scientists have made enormous strides in educational neuroscience, we still know relatively little about how each region of the brain works together with the others. What we do know is that the human brain is not fully developed at birth, and that it continues to develop based on a person's experiences. Shane, are you familiar with Dr. Dan Siegel?
I've heard of him.
Dr. Siegel has contributed so much to our collective understanding of how experiences impact our brains. In his book, The Whole Brain Child, he explains how our experiences actually change the physical structure of the brain. Our brain cells or neurons become active and they fire each time we have an experience. When these billions of intricately connected neurons fire together, they grow new connections. Over time, the connections that result from firing lead to rewiring in the brain. That means that based on the quality of our experiences, we can actually rewire the brain so that we become healthier and happier.
What are these types of experiences that you're referring to have the potential to rewire our brains?
Actually, everything that happens to us, the music we hear, the places we visit, the kind of discipline we receive, the emotions we feel, it all profoundly affects our brain's development. Everyday moments influence how a child's brain develops.
Mm-hmm.
So we can foster healthy development of our students' brains by offering opportunities to exercise them.
Wow, that sounds like a big responsibility.
I find that fact to be incredibly empowering for educators. As I said before, everyday moments influence how a child's brain develops. I think sometimes we get discouraged by the things we can't impact in order to secure better outcomes for our students. We can't change the experiences our students had before they entered our classroom, and we can't determine what they'll experience when they're outside of our classroom, but we can facilitate those neurological connections when they're with us. We can actually transform our students' experiences so that their brains are actively firing, which in turn facilitates greater development of relationship skills and character. I think it's equally empowering for parents who may wish we could have a do-over. Understanding that we can begin today to offer experiences that repair harm and promote healthy brain development gives us hope.
That is empowering. Now, are there other principles of neuroscience that relate to SEL?
Well, Shane, there really are. We know that the brain is a hierarchical structure composed of three primary systems: the brainstem, the limbic system, and the cerebral cortex. Understanding what each of those three parts of the brain does helps teachers and students, even very young students, to be aware of what's happening in their brains and how that activity relates to their well-being and their readiness to learn.
Can you tell us a little bit more about these three parts of the brain?
Sure. The brain stem contains the visual and auditory centers and sensory pathways. This is the part that's responsible for alerting us to our basic physiological needs, like hunger, dehydration, the need to use the restroom, and for making us aware when there's a potential threat to our safety. If we don't attend to the messages we receive from the brain stem, then we can't access the other parts of our brain. That's why, for example, we have a hard time focusing when our bladder is full, or why it's easier to snap at people when we're hungry.
I can certainly relate to that.
I think we all can. This takes us back to Maslow. We have to attend to our basic needs before we can address emotions and higher level cognitive functions.
Okay, so the next is the limbic system.
Right. The limbic system is our emotional center and the area for memory formation. This is the part of the brain that initiates our flight, fight, or freeze instinct. Again, if we ignore the emotional center of our brain, that's when our emotions tend to become larger than life, and we aren't able to access the prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for cognitive processes like focusing, language formation, problem solving, creating, and reasoning. These are high-level functions we see in Bloom's taxonomy, and they allow us to be in a state of readiness to learn.
So what makes this information relevant for parents, teachers, and students?
The language of the brain stem is sensation. And if sensations such as discomfort, hunger, and touch are left unattended to early in life, then a child or adolescent may need to re-experience those critical developmental steps and skills that occur in the brainstem, like movement and sensory regulation.
What could that look like in a classroom setting?
Whether it's in a classroom or at home, these experiences can include balancing, fine motor activity, and temperature regulation, which may need to be re-experienced later in life in order to repair damage and fill in developmental gaps. That's why sensory motor integration is the first of the 7 social emotional competencies. We want to be sure everyone has caught up, so to speak, before we move on to understanding and regulating our emotions and connecting and collaborating with others. There are some simple strategies and activities that are appropriate depending on the age of your students. We'll talk about that the next time.
So these are primarily for students whose childhood experiences left a gap in brain development?
Well, we know that students who've been affected by chronic stress enter our classrooms with varying levels of brain activation and development. We know that many of our students come to school with high levels of adversity and trauma. And we're now realizing that brain development can be compromised by those experiences. But what we often overlook is that our highest performing students can enter the classroom with high levels of stress as well. Everyone experiences stress to some degree. And simply put, chronic stress negatively impacts the brain. We have an opportunity to attend to the neurodiversity of all students and to meet them where they are. As we grow in social-emotional competence alongside our students, we'll be able to prime their brains for character development, connection, and learning.
Now that we've laid the foundation of what SEL is, what the competencies are, and why they're important, where do we go from here?
Yeah, that's a good question. We'll begin with a self-assessment for teachers and parents to provide a gauge of how we're doing in these areas that we hope to see our students develop. I would also recommend taking a few minutes to become familiar with the ACEs framework if you haven't already. You can get an idea of your own ACEs score. This knowledge has helped me to navigate relationships, both professional and personal, with greater compassion and understanding. Let me give you an example. When my husband and I looked at the ACEs framework together, it was a powerful aha moment. We realized that our experiences during childhood impact our thought processes and how we interpret and respond to situations to this day. That knowledge has helped me to approach difficult communication with greater empathy and understanding in my family relationships, as well as my relationships at work and with students.
Do you think all teachers should understand ACEs and trauma?
I think it's important to get a general understanding of these experiences that our students have lived through, but not in order to label specific students or to predict their behaviors or outcomes. Instead, having an idea of the kinds of trauma students may have experienced helps us to approach them and their potentially disruptive behaviors with greater empathy and understanding. Again, the same responses, compassion and empowerment, are beneficial for all students, regardless of their ACEs score.
That makes sense. Next time, we'll do a deeper dive into each of the 7 competencies, beginning with sensory motor integration.
That's right. For each competency, we'll talk about how to develop it in our own life and teaching practice. Then we'll offer some suggestions for modeling, teaching, and practicing each competency in the classroom.
That sounds great. We hope you'll join us next time as we explore the first social-emotional competency, which is sensory-motor integration. Tina and Karen, thanks for setting the stage for us today.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.